Brooklands Radio presents Surrey Business Affairs with Jackie Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to Surrey Business Affairs with me, Jackie Mitchell. We'll be covering subjects relating to business, the challenges facing businesses in the area, as well as new opportunities and innovations. And if you'd like to join in, email studio@brooklandsradio.co.uk with any comments or questions for our guests. On today's show, we have Leah Chowdhury, Managing Director of Leah C. Childcare, Nikki Faulkner from Mulberry Bush Consulting, and Jonathan Hamilton, Executive Director, BNI Surrey. But to start with, I'd like to welcome our first guest to the studio, Loretta Cundy from Mad About My Business. Hello, Loretta.
Hi, Jackie. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, welcome to the studio. So before we get into what your business does, perhaps you'd like to give us a bit of information about your background and what did you do before this?
So before I had Mad About My Business, I was working in events as an event coordinator, and I had a long passion, I could say, about psychology and personal development. And in 2008, when the credit crunch happened, the business that I was working in went under, and I had a new change of direction. And at that point, I had a look at my life and decided what was it that I was really interested in, and decided to retrain. And I did my undergraduate in counseling and psychology. And when I finished that, I went on and did my occupational psychology master's degree. And alongside that, I had done a diploma in coaching. So fast forward a little bit, a few years on, in 2014, I decided to set up business in coaching and using the psychology background that I had.
Right. And so what made you take the plunge and set up your own business?
I guess what it was is that I wanted to see how I could have the most effect, drawing all the skills that I had, and also creating something. There was a creative element involved in it. I wanted to, I guess, be my own boss and create something in it, really, is what it was about.
Okay, and how did you start about setting up the business? Because I understand it's with your sister, isn't it, Madeline?
Yes, that's right. So what happened is, by coincidence, actually, I was having a look on Facebook one day, and with the idea of setting up a business by myself, and I saw that Madeleine had put a post on Facebook that she was in the process of setting up a business in coaching as well.
Wow,
which
what a coincidence.
Which I had absolutely no idea about. I messaged her and said to her, you know, what are you doing? How are you going about setting up business? Because I'm thinking of doing a similar sort of thing. And she said to me, well, actually, you know, I had been thinking about it, and she didn't want to go into business alone, that she wanted a partner but hadn't figured out who that was going to be, and invited me to join her. And we've been partners ever since, really.
And what was the first business called?
So the first business is Mad About My Life, and that's a personal development business, coaching as well. And that looks at an individual as a whole in any areas that they'd like to develop personally for themselves.
And do you do many business owners? Do you coach many business owners?
Yes, actually I do. And as a result, Mad About My Business stemmed from that. I was finding that I was dealing with a lot of business owners, and a lot of what I was working with was stress-related issues from the work environment. And as a result, Mad About My Business came to be, because I felt that it was something that needed to be addressed. And I think what I'm noticing, particularly over the last year, is that there's been a big drive for awareness around mental health, particularly in the workplace. So the two businesses run alongside each other, one being personal development or personal focused, and then the second one being particularly stress-related in the workplace.
Right, because it's quite interesting, isn't it, that 11.7 million days are lost to work-related stress, and that accounts for 45% of all illness absenteeism, which
yes.
is extraordinary.
Yes, and I think what's happening is there is an awareness being raised, but I don't think we really realise the implications and impact of stress and how it plays itself out and what an impact it has for businesses and for our bottom lines.
So a lot of the businesses that come to you, is that one of the key problems they're having with stress amongst their employees?
Yes, exactly. And I think initially businesses might see the problem showing in other ways. So, for example, they're having a high staff turnover. They're not able to keep retention, or staff are absent quite often, or for some reason performance isn't the way that it should be. And actually, when we drill down, what's underneath it is stress. And a person's inability to cope with the pressure that they're under. And really sometimes what that comes down to is their perception around the pressure, and how we reframe that, but also the support that we provide and the support that we help organizations provide for the individuals too and the employees.
And so how do you work with these companies to help alleviate all this stress?
Okay. So the first thing that we do before I start is I secure management's commitment and also the commitment of the employees, because that's fundamental. I won't be able to make any changes if everyone else isn't on board. So it's understanding that and evaluating what's happening in the organization. So we do that by implementing a range of different tools such as surveys and looking at existing data, like I mentioned a moment ago about absenteeism. We also do feedback groups, so finding out from employees what are happening, what's going on for them, and then as we drill down, I work one-on-one with individuals to find out how the stress might be playing itself out. And then on an absolutely fundamental level, I work on a one-to-one basis with individuals and help to implement tools and strategies for them to manage the stress that they're facing. And I bring in other experts as well, whether you know, because it might be at moments that there's a cultural issue happening, and then I bring in experts to help them implement different changes in culture in the business.
And when you coach individuals, is this kind of like an hour session, or how does it work?
So with my organizations, it's 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. And again, because it's so intense and it's 90 minutes, it wouldn't be something that's done on a weekly basis. It would probably be something that's done bi-weekly or once a month, because what happens in a coaching session is it's very proactive. It's very active. So we do the coaching session looks at what's going on, but also what it does is it looks at solutions for whatever the individual and the organization is facing, and then there's actions required that need to be implemented. So what happens is that there needs to be a space for the individual and the organization to go away and implement the actions that have come out of the coaching session.
Right, and what sort of techniques do you employ to help these people?
Okay, so I draw from solution focus. So a lot of the tools that I draw from are from counseling that have been converted into coaching. So I draw from cognitive behavioral coaching. I use solution focused coaching. And then also what I do is, from a Mad About My Business and Mad About My Life perspective, we take a point of view of looking at the person from a holistic whole perspective, because stress management is not just psychological. There are physiological elements involved, and there are environmental elements involved, mm-hmm, as well. So when I work with individual, we look at all of those elements involved. So we look at what's happening in their nutrition, what's happening in their exercise, what's happening in their environment, whether it be at home or at work, and see whether anything needs to be addressed within that too.
Okay, and how many people do you coach on an individual basis within a company?
So I have a limited, obviously, because there's only myself. The way that I have an offering with the one-to-one staff is I would see up to 5 people in any one day. But what I do also offer is I offer talks, so awareness-raising talks that help organizations understand what they need to look out for, but also immediately give them some tools and strategies to use. I also offer one-day workshops, and the workshops are for 15 individuals at any one time, and that really goes a little bit deeper into understanding how stress plays itself out, and also the individuals walk away with a real rounded toolkit to be able to implement. So the one-to-one stuff is much more limited because it does require me being there face to face.
Sure. And apart from stress, what are the other key problems do you think that people come to you with?
So one of the other problems I would say is communication. Interpersonal relationships within organizations is something else that is highlighted as sometimes adding to the pressures that individuals face. So knowing how to communicate with colleagues, how to communicate with employees, but also how to communicate with managers is really important. So we look at educating and addressing communication and really looking at learning how to communicate assertively and some of the misconceptions that people might have around what assertive communication is. Because I think a lot of times people hear assertive communication and I think that's quite aggressive, and actually it's not that at all. It's about a win-win position and being able to respect someone else's position but also hold your own. So I work a lot in that sort of way too.
Because also technology has had a down effect on communication, because, I mean, there are a lot of offices, I hear stories of people sending each other emails and they sit next door to them or, you know, just opposite. And instead of going to see them face to face, they just ping an email out, and also between bosses and employees.
Definitely, definitely. So I think it's about, again, it's all about raising awareness. You know, it's about addressing these things in a sense of, if there is a cultural issue happening in organizations, and it, what comes out of it is actually there's a lack of communication between the members within the organization, addressing such things as maybe having time where individuals take time out to have a conversation would be important. So yes, there are issues like that. And it, again, it's about creating awareness about what's happening in your organization.
And so how do you run the business with your sister then? Is that a difficult thing to do?
What's nice about it, obviously there's that difficulty of being in two different countries.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
I see. Where is your sister then?
So she's based in South Africa.
Ah, okay.
But, you know, the plus side of technology these days is that we are able to work quite well because we have Sky and we have shared documents and all the rest of it. And I think what's lovely about working with my sister and Madeleine is we both have different interests and similar interests. So we have strengths that we pull with each other. Madeleine has a real physicality and nutritional background as alongside the coaching side of things, where I have quite a psychological background. And we work together online platforms, but we both work separately within our own countries and pool knowledge and resources with each other.
And do you ever sort of present workshops together?
We do, but those are online, so webinars and that sort of thing.
Okay, that's great. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Loretta. Would you like to give us your website details so people can get more information?
Yes, wonderful. Thank you for having me. My website is madaboutmybusiness.com.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Loretta Cundy from Mad About My Business, and that completes the first part of our program. In the next part of our program, we'll be talking to Leah Chowdhury, the founder and managing director of Leah C Childcare.
You're listening to Surrey Business Affairs on Brooklyn's Radio, for and about local businesses in Surrey.
Hair Mechanics is Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group, with two superior salons, one in the heart of West Byfleet and the second in the Bourne Valley Garden Centre of Addlesden. Hair Mechanics offers hairstyling and finishing, beauty and holistic therapies, nail treatments, tanning and electrolysis. For our office promotions, contact information and more, please see our website hairmechanics.co.uk or call 01932 350 877. Hair Mechanics, Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group.
If you're passing Walton Community Hospital or near the halfway in Walton, then pop into the hospital coffee shop run by the League of Friends. Enjoy a nice cup of tea for only 60p or a delicious cup of coffee for only 70p. Plus a range of sweets, biscuits, soft drinks, crisps, cards and sundries. We're all volunteers so we can keep the prices low. That's the coffee shop at Walton Community Hospital in Rodney Road, Walton. Open from 10am to 4pm weekdays and from 2pm to 4pm on Saturdays.
It's Surrey Business Affairs with Jackie Mitchell.
Hello there and welcome back to Surrey Business Affairs with me, Jackie Mitchell. I'm now joined in the studio by Leah Chowdhury from Leah C Childcare. Hello there.
Hi, Jackie. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Well, first of all, can we clarify the title of your business? Because when I went on the website, it then comes up as Pop You Party and Play.
So Leah C Childcare is our partner company, which is arching company over what we do in our nannying agency as well as pop-up party and play. So we do two aspects of our business, but our main focus is our pop-up party and play aspect. Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll get on to that in a minute, but first of all, what did you do before you started up?
So my kind of like interest in working with children kind of started at a very young age. I was kind of working with children from the young age of about 16, 17 years old, kind of working in summer schools and helping with special needs children. And actually, I went out to Sri Lanka to work in an orphanage out there for a while to help with children with who have had effects of the tsunami accident. And then decided to pursue that a little bit further and do a childhood psychology degree at Bristol University. My passion continued working in a different number of different settings, such as children's centres. And then I kind of went into the corporate world for a while to get a bit of an understanding of how kind of what the corporate world's about, kind of business understanding, and then decided to set up pop-up party and play. So kind of that was very recently in the last like 2 years. So yes.
So what made you think, right, I'm going to start up my own business? Because you're very young, aren't you? You're only 25,
yes,
aren't
you? Yes, I am. Yes, very, very young. But I think what I realised is that being in a corporate environment, I understood how much working parents struggled with childcare. And that was something that I really wanted to make a difference with. And actually, why is no one out there kind of helping them all these kind of times when there's weekend trainings or evening events where they really, that's when they really need the childcare because they don't have schools or they're not in school at the time. So that was one of our main focuses when we start up Pop-Up Party and Play, because we cater to providing childcare services at corporate events. So we will go in and we'll set up a mini creche facility at those kind of things. And I really wanted to actually target those markets we're really trying to struggle with the childcare facilities.
So when you say you do childcare at events, so in other words, if somebody had a wedding,
yeah,
you could lay on people to look after the children at the wedding so they
Absolutely.
Don't scream all throughout the service, this kind of thing. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So we specialise in corporate events, like I mentioned, weddings, like you said, and also we do kind of like special events, birthday parties, and I also work with members clubs as well. So we kind of come in, set up a whole entire creche facility that involves that arts and crafts area, like dressing up area, games area, mini disco, everything you could possibly think of. And we have it all in one room for them to keep them distracted for hours so they can have fun. So it's a party within a party for the children.
So you come with all the equipment and everything?
Everything. All the equipment.
And are you very hands-on with this? Or have you got all your staff do it all? Or?
I'm in every single event that I go to. I manage
really?
Every single event, yes. And I also have over 40 staff that work for me as nannies. That I also, depending on the age of the children, we really cater to the staff that we bring, because that's seriously like really important to us at Pop-Up Party and Play, because we really feel that we need to kind of cater their needs. So we bring, if they're slightly younger age group, we'll bring staff that specialize in younger age and got more experience with them as well.
Uh-huh. And you also do the babysitters and nannies for people.
Yes.
And also an in-room hotel nanny service. What is that all about?
So we also, part of Pop-Up Party and Play in Leah C Childcare, we do we run as a nannying agency as well. So our 40 staff that work for us, also we use them on an ad hoc basis. So you can contact us and say, actually, I would need a babysitter next week, or I need a nanny for a week after. And we kind of liaise with the client to work out what they need. And then we go out to our staff and reach out and pick the perfect nanny for you depending on your criteria, and then I introduce the nanny to the client, and then from there they see CVs and I've done all the checks, I've done the DBS check, the first aid check, but they can just look all over that paperwork and we kind of meet and liaise those two. And we also do permanent nannies as well. In terms of the in-room hotel babysitters, that's a service that we provide on top of our creche facilities at weddings or members clubs or corporate events, where you can ask us if they need an extra babysitter. We can provide those babysitters in the hotel rooms as well.
Right. And do businesses also hire your services to set up a creche within their company? Is that something else that you might do?
Not in terms of inside their company, but we do work with a lot of corporates in terms of providing our services at events that they do. So, for example, if they do a weekend training event, and this is very difficult for parents because at weekends, what are they supposed to do with their children? They can't just magically appear a nanny over the weekend. So we're there to really cater so that those working parents don't miss out on those crucial times of training, which is very important in terms of their development. And we go in and we set up a creche facility. So whilst they're having their training, that we provide that creche facility, or if there's an evening training event, we provide those creche facilities. So we liaise with the corporates to make sure that they're catered for.
Okay. And do you have any problems finding staff?
Actually, no. I don't find a problem with finding staff, but I'm very particular about the staff I hire, because it's so important that we remain very high quality standards. So I face-to-face interview every single one of my staff. So we go through recruitment process is very tough. So we interview all of them. We kind of make sure that they're DBS checked, first aid trained, all of our staff over the age of 21 too. So we get a lot of interest, but I'm very particular about who we hire as well. So it's a quality as well.
Okay, well, we're moving on now to this amazing feature you're about to do, which is you're going to be the first ever British Asian woman to swim 24 miles in 13 degrees of water across the English Channel in July.
I am indeed, yes.
Well, that's fantastic. So how did you get involved with this? What made you decide that this was the way you were going to raise money?
So as you could probably tell from my business, Pop Up Party and Play, I'm very passionate about helping children. And our overarching kind of slogan that we go for between my business and my charity work is discovering a brighter future in every child. So if that's with providing great quality, high quality childcare, it's also kind of going out and helping those less fortunate as well. So I knew I wanted to, well, for years I've been working with different children's charities to help make a difference in children's lives. So recently, about 2 years ago, I did the London Marathon for UNICEF. And I think from that, I just wanted to make something bigger and more extravagant and more kind of dangerous to a certain extent. And I've previously used to swim, and I wanted to do something like swimming the Channel, and I was like, no one out there does that, no one swims the Channel. And then I did a bit of research and realized actually no, people actually do it.
And David Walliams did it.
David Walliams,
yes.
Did it, yeah. So people occasionally do it. So I did a bit of research and thought actually this is a really dangerous and life challenging challenge that I wanted to take on to help raise funds. So I'm actually working with the British Asia Trust to help tackle child trafficking within India, and hoping to raise £50,000 for them. So, well, I've raised 32 so far.
You've raised 32,000 already?
Yeah, raised 32 so far.
Well,
so
congratulations.
Thank
That's
you
fantastic.
So
we'll have to put your Just Giving page on the website.
That that'd be amazing.
On our Facebook page. Yes, that sounds really good. So tell us more about this challenge then. What sort of training are you having to do?
So at the moment I'm training about 25 kilometres a week. I actually found out this morning from my coach that a swimming equivalent of running the marathon is about 10 kilometres, and I'm training 25 kilometres a week. So I'm putting my body under a lot of strain and pressure, so it's equivalent to 2 or 3 marathons a week.
And so where do you go swimming to do that?
At the moment I'm doing it in pools. So I'm at the Leatherhead Leisure Centre a couple of times. I also so I do 2 sessions in Surrey, and then I do a couple of sessions in town with my coach as well. So actually going down to Dover this weekend to do my first open water this season, so hopefully getting out there more, a little bit more as well.
Oh, I wish you all the best with that. And what else are you doing? Are you doing anything running or any gym work or anything like that?
No,
is it just the swimming?
Yeah, I'm actually not allowed to do anything else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because your body's kind of developing muscles in certain ways, so that if you do other forms of exercise, it actually hinders the training that you're doing in the pool. So I'm only allowed to do walking and yoga on top of what I'm doing. So it's swim, 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 and occasionally a nice brisk walk, which would probably be lovely today, actually being nice and sunny outside.
So. Yes, indeed. And so how on earth do you manage to juggle this with running your business?
I use my 24 hours in a day very effectively, I think. I just a lot of planning and a lot of support actually by my family and friends. I can give it out completely, support me in everything I do. So I think helping with their help and support, my mum and dad help me plan my meals and plan my training sessions, and if I ever need help, my family and friends in terms of my business or anything, they're very supportive. And I've also got a great team behind me at Pop-Up
I was going
Party
to say your staff me. Probably help you yeah, enormously my, don't they?
They're absolutely incredible, and they've always been very supportive of what I do outside of work as well as in work, inside work as well. So with a combination of both, it's a lot of planning, and people around surrounding me is absolutely incredible and helps me manage everything I do.
Do you have any advice for business owners on how to manage their time?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I could say is plan, like I said, a lot of planning, and kind of, I think it's a lot to do with the mindset as well. I think I knew at the beginning of the year that I wanted to achieve X amount of goals in my business and X amount of goals outside of my work, and that planning, and I think it's about being realistic as well. And I was like, these are two things I'm going to focus on this year, and not overstretching yourself and exhausting yourself, and making actually do smaller goals as well. I want to achieve these two things this month, these two things next month. And having those smaller bite-sized goals is also very, very helpful in terms of planning and multitasking. Definitely.
Yes, because I suppose if you manage to do those two small goals, and that'll help you the next two, and so on and so forth. Yes.
Absolutely.
And so how important do you think it is for businesses to support charities like you're doing?
I just think it's invaluable. I think it's also, for me, being such a young person, being such a fortunate situation to have a business in the childcare industry that's become very picked up very quickly, and people are very, very interested in it. It humbles you. It brings you back to reality, and it's actually what I love to do is my charity work and giving back, because it makes me realize actually I can improve my services even more when I go back to the business, because I've like actually I've helped a lot of children outside of work, and I'm going back and being actually this is just humbles me a little bit more. So I think it's absolutely invaluable.
Okay, well, thanks very much for coming on the show. Would you like to give us your website details if people want to get more information?
Absolutely. If you'd like more information from Pop-Up Party and Play, it's www.popuppartyandplay.co.uk. And also my Just Giving link is also on that page as well. So please, if you'd love to donate, I would appreciate any form of donations. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. That was Leah Chowdhury from Leah C Childcare. And the next part of our programme, we're going to be talking to Nikki Faulkner from Mulberry Bush Consulting.
Surrey Business Affairs, for and about local businesses in Surrey.
Do you own or work for a company? If so, you'll know that finding and keeping customers is at the heart of your success. With OmniLocal Business Networking, you'll have a unique opportunity to meet up to 30 potential customers over breakfast and connect with their customers too. So come and try a meeting near you for just £12, including breakfast and a free training seminar. Meetings are fast, informal and most of all profitable. Telephone 07900 31 26 34 or visit our website to learn more and see what people are saying about how we've helped them grow their business. Omni, that's OMNI, Local Business Networking, where local businesses connect to succeed.
Do you have a leaky roof or dripping gutter? Then contact Roofcraft of Surrey. We are a family-run business who specialise in all aspects of roofing, from replacing a roof tile to a complete new roof, soffits, fascias and guttering. All work is carried out by qualified and professional craftsmen within tight timescales and budgets. And we are proud to belong to five official trade bodies, including Trust a Trader. Visit roofcraftofsurrey.co.uk or call 01372 889698 and be amazed at what we can do. Roofcraft of Surrey, keeping a roof over your head.
It's Surrey Business Affairs with Jackie Mitchell.
Hello there and welcome back to Surrey Business Affairs with me, Jackie Mitchell. I'm now joined by Nikki Faulkner from Mulberry Bush Consulting. Hello, Nikki.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, welcome to the show. So before we get into what your business does now, what is your background? What were you doing before you set it up?
So initially, way back when, I have a PhD in geophysics, like you do. And I started off in the oil industry, which is often where you go when you've done geophysics. And I started off in technical support. So I used to help people in the oil industry that used very high-end technical software. And I got promoted to being a manager fairly quickly. And I realised that actually what I really enjoyed was the management side of things and not the technical support. So I quickly moved into that area. And as I went through in the corporate world, in the oil and gas world, I actually moved from being involved in technical support with people that basically sat in front of computers all day and moved to areas where people went out on the rigs, so real oil company type stuff. And I actually got moved to a business unit to help them with their people management issues because I'd obviously demonstrated that I had an ability to do that.
Right. And then so what happened after that?
So as the oil industry is very cyclical, lots of redundancy rounds every so many years. So I got caught in a redundancy cycle, partly because I'd been moved into this specific position. So I was the only one in the entire company that had that particular job description. So it was one of those moments where you know it's going to happen and you wait for it. So actually, for me, it was a really good timing because I would always fancied setting up a company. And it was one of those moments where you think, actually, now I've got a bit of capital behind me to do it. And I can take the things I've been doing in the corporate world and transfer them to the small business.
Okay, because you were doing an awful lot of travelling, weren't you, in Scandinavia, sub-Saharan Africa, I believe,
yes,
as well.
Yes, so the role I had before I left was to help new managers who were technical become managers of basically business units in different parts of the world. So some of them were in Africa, some of them were in Scandinavia. I looked after that whole region. So I used to work with those managers to make sure they understood what they needed to do in terms of people management to make sure that these businesses they were setting up under the corporate umbrella would be successful.
And this, of course, you could bring with you to your own business when you set it up.
Yeah,
all that experience.
So essentially, what I do now is the same thing. The difference is I have to find clients now, which has its own disadvantages and benefits. When I was in the corporate world, people had to work with me because that was the business unit. They were expected to work with me. But that has a disadvantage of trying to work with someone that doesn't want to work with you is very difficult. So actually now, at least the people that work with me, they've chosen to do so. So it tends to be a really productive relationship.
Okay. And how do you help small businesses exactly?
So I tend to help them at two stages. So I either help them in what I would call their first growth spurt. So if they've gone from starting a business and doing everything themselves, and now they've got this team, and typically they'll have a team of two or three people, they might lose two of those three people and realize that they're not very good at doing it, or they don't really know who they should be hiring. So I work with those business owners to help them set up the structure and the processes and help them learn to communicate with their team. We look at everything from recruitment through induction processes all the way through to the whole gamut of performance management, but the recruitment piece often is key for them because it's about teaching them how to figure out who it is they're even looking for, how to go about finding them, how to interview them, how to make objective decisions, and then what to do with them once they've got them on board.
So would that entail you actually sitting in on the interview sometimes?
No. Work exclusively with the business owners, and I help train them, and then they take it into practice with themselves. But I typically run a 6-month program, so in the course of that, you know, I get feedback from them on how it's going, so I can feed back into it. So I don't tend to get involved with the business. I'm just basically a mentor, trainer for the business owner.
Okay, and what do you find are the most common problems that these people have?
So at that stage, it really is about finding the right sort of people, having an understanding of what their culture and values are for the business and finding people that fit with that, because typically everyone goes out looking for technical ability, and actually that's part of it. But in a very small business in particular, it's even more important that everybody does fit, because otherwise you're going to waste an awful lot of energy pulling against each other if you don't share the same values and culture. So that's probably one of the main things. Another one is people think they don't need to worry about induction until somebody starts on the first day, whereas I would say actually you want to plan those first few weeks very carefully, because sitting somebody in front of a computer and telling them to read documents for a month is not really the way to get someone motivated to start a new job. So again, a lot of it's about the planning and the structures so that people can consistently repeat things knowing that they'll work.
And of course, one of your areas is the ability of building teams. So how do you go about that?
So the building team part is really, once you've got people in place, it's really, again, mostly I work with the business owners to make sure that they are putting all the right communication structures in place to have that kind of trust in both directions with the team and the manager. I also work with a second group of businesses, the slightly bigger ones that typically have 10 to 15 employees, and they're ready to put their first layer of management in. And again, they're having to learn to let go and trust the things that they've managed to do so far and pass that down to the next layer. Often they're people they've promoted, so it's a great success story for the business, but obviously there's a moment there where could all go horribly wrong. So we tend to work with those. We work with the new managers and the business owner in that situation to, again, make sure that all the bits are in place, that the communication's happening so that the team actually gels and works together, make sure that people haven't forgotten what it is they're looking for when they recruit. So that's always ongoing. And making sure that the team you've got are really, they understand what the feedback mechanisms are in both directions so that everything really works very well together.
So if there's a one team player who just doesn't fit, would you then actually advise the business and say, well, look, you know, so and so isn't really, you know, doesn't really fit. You're going to have to get rid of them, or would you do that?
I advise them on the sort of communications and conversations they might want to have with that person to try and dig down and find out why that person isn't performing. So is it actually they haven't understood what we wanted them to do? Is it that they've just decided they don't want to do it? They really aren't motivated. Is there something else going on in their lives? So basically act as a manager, but through their actual manager, to have all the right conversations, and then you can make an objective decision about whether it's something you can do internally to try and turn things around, or whether actually there really is no point, the person really doesn't want to be there, in which case that's a different conversation. If the person doesn't want to leave and we start getting into sort of, you know, disciplinary type things, then I would recommend they talk to an HR professional at that point and take it through. But if they've put all the other bits in place, then if we get to that point, it's much easier for an HR professional to pick up from there and take it forwards without having to spend a lot of time having to redo things that maybe hadn't otherwise been done.
Is it difficult finding the right staff these days?
I think it depends what kind of business you're in. I work across all sorts of sectors, so I think it's very variable. It depends where you are as well. I mean, around where we are now, it is quite difficult because that we don't have much unemployment and the house prices are high, so you know, it can be. But I think if you're very specific about what you're looking for and you don't just hire the first person that walks along, you know, you can make things work really well.
Okay, and how do you train the business owners to manage the teams?
So typically, the very first time I work with a new client, we spend a whole day together and we do a real big deep dive into all the things they've got going on with their people at the moment, what kind of management practices they've got, what processes and everything, and we spend a day really working very closely, starting to put some things initially together and create an action plan. After that, I work usually over a 6-month sort of program, and we work remotely. So what we do is they have very targeted exercises to do to help them customize sort of standard ideas into something that will work specifically for their company, very specific to where they are in their evolutionary state. And then we get together, usually sort of Zoom, Skype type situation, where we'll actually work through that. And a lot of that discussion ends up usually being how you're going to communicate whatever we're working on to the team to roll it out. So you don't just walk in one day and say, here's some goals, here's this, here's that. But it's a lot about sort of setting up the conversations that they're going to have. And then obviously next time we feedback and see how that went, and we build from there.
Okay, now you talk about that feedback. So how is that kind of worked out? Is there a questionnaire people fill in, or how does that work?
So feedback from the...
From the courses and from the
yes.
from the
Yes, so managers. I structure the programs by topic, and at the end of every major topic we get feedback anyway to see how things are going, but and we structure things so that we start with whatever's the most important to the business when I start working with them, so we can get things really moving. But they'll cover everything over the course of about 6 months, so obviously if we started something, we don't just start it, we do it for a few weeks and then we move on and forget it, so we kind of keep revisiting. Mm-hmm. So if you'd started mm-hmm. out on performance goals and you're doing some feedback, we'll keep revisiting, how's that going, have you done sessions recently, have you had conversations. I always ask them what's going on at the moment, so if something, because I mean with people management things change all the time, so every session we have it's like, you know, what's going on at the moment, what's going well, what's not going so well, is there something that you want to talk about this time specifically that maybe not isn't related to the topic we're working on, but yeah, we can address while it's current.
Yes, and how important is the feedback?
Very important. It's important for me to understand what's going on with the business, how we're progressing. Very important for them to make sure that they feel that they're actually making progress and that we're actually not just doing everything theoretically, but we're actually dealing with stuff as and when it comes up.
Okay, I was interested to see one of your blogs was about difficult conversations.
Yeah.
So how would you describe difficult conversations? Is it making people redundant, or
so, well,
what did
it's
you
funny.
Mean?
So often when you say that, people think it's the really big things. So something really big's happening, like I need to make you redundant. London? Well, yes, that is a difficult conversation. But actually, for most business owners, the difficult conversations are any conversation that you're avoiding having. So it can be over something very small. It can be something where it's starting to irritate you that so-and-so is not doing something exactly the way you want it. But you don't mention it to start with because you don't want to upset them, or, you know, it might all sort itself out. But to me, a difficult conversation is any time you're avoiding it for whatever reason, whether you're worried you're going to get emotional, you're worried they're going to get emotional. But it's just about making sure that you're having the conversations that need to be had.
Right, right. So so difficult conversations can mean all sorts of things, in other words.
Yeah. So say, as soon as you feel that you want to avoid it, it by its definition is a difficult conversation, because if you didn't want to avoid it, then it would be easy and you just have it, you wouldn't even think about it.
And so what is the advice then on how people should deal with that?
So usually I would say the first thing to do is to not do anything rashly. So typically anything like that often comes with some sort of emotion. So it might be anger or annoyance or something, and people want to dive in and start dealing with it instantly. But my recommendation is always to step back, have a think, and just think about what evidence you've got, you know, where you came to the conclusions you came to, and make sure you understand what the situation is. And then you can start thinking about how you'll broach it so you can make it as positive as possible. And you can also make sure that you're talking to the person, you know, in a way that you're not going to destroy them over it. You're trying to make it a learning experience where they can get something beneficial out of it.
Okay, well, thanks very much. I'm sorry we ran out of time. Thank you very much, Nikki.
Thank you.
That was Nikki Faulkner from Mulberry Bush Consulting. That ends the third part of our programme. In the next part of our programme, we're going to be talking to Jonathan Hamilton from BNI Surrey.
You're listening to Surrey Business Affairs on Brooklyn's Radio, for and about local businesses in Surrey.
Has anyone ever recommended your business? Imagine if you had an active group of local business owners all promoting your business to their contacts. BNI works for all professions, from accountants to florists, from solicitors to personal trainers. BNI referral groups work. If you are a business owner in Surrey and you are looking to take on more business, BNI could help you to open doors that would otherwise remain closed. Google BNI Surrey and enter your details to arrange a no-obligation trial visit to your nearest group. BNI Surrey. Changing the way Surrey does business.
As well as listening live to Brooklyn's Radio, you can listen on demand to our podcasts of interviews and feature programmes at brooklynsradio.co.uk. Check out the programmes and features by clicking on the show logos, and keep up to date with the latest podcasts on our latest podcasts page. The Sound of Surrey, on demand at brooklynsradio.co.uk.
It's Surrey Business Affairs with Jackie Mitchell.
Hello there, and welcome back to Surrey Business Affairs with me, Jackie Mitchell. I'm now joined by Jonathan Hamilton from BNI Surrey. Hello there, Jonathan.
Hi, Jackie. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. And you?
Yeah, enjoying the sunshine.
Yeah, absolutely. Make the most of it. Right. So before we get on to BNI Surrey and what it does, can you tell us a bit about your background? What did you do before becoming executive director?
Yeah, absolutely. So I used to have a full-time job as an electronics engineer, and I also ran a part-time business as a utility warehouse distributor for a number of years. And honestly, I struggled to get introductions for that business because, I mean, if you think about it, someone knocks on your door and asks you for if you want to save money on your gas and electric, you don't tend to throw the doors wide open and welcome them in. It's a very different response, and I got a lot of rejection. So I spoke to my mentors and people within Utility Warehouse, and they highly recommended BNI.
Mm-hmm.
So I popped along to Dover BNI, which was my most convenient group at the time.
And when was that?
That was 14th of November 2009.
Oh, right, okay.
I remember that quite clearly. And yeah, wonderful group of people. And although I wasn't a natural people person, I found them a really supportive, collaborative bunch of people, and they really helped me.
How did it help your business?
Well, they started to open doors for me, so I started getting introductions, referrals, as we call them. People expecting a phone call saying, "Yeah, I will. You know, I'll give you a fair shot. I'll listen to what you've got to say." And they were proper, you know, proper referrals, proper introductions. So I started to build my business almost entirely on the back of those introductions that came from Dover BNI.
Right, and of course BNI stands for Business Networking International. So for those who don't know, could you perhaps give us a short description about what is BNI?
Yeah, sure. So BNI is, although we call it a networking organisation, we're really a referrals organisation. So we operate groups of local business owners all around the world, actually. But obviously, specifically in Surrey, we've got 13 current active groups of local business owners. We only allow one person per profession, so one solicitor, one financial advisor, one builder, etc. And once you've applied and been accepted as a member, you've got exclusivity in your category that you've applied for.
Right.
And then meet once a week, and we pass, as I say, qualified referral opportunities between the members. So we open doors for each other and support each other in growing our businesses.
And of course, the meeting starts at 6:30 in the morning, so people can be back at their desks by 9 o'clock.
Most of the groups are breakfast groups, so yeah, that's correct. So most groups, doors open at sort of 6:30. Meeting itself runs from 7 to 8:30. And that was very attractive to me as a member, actually. Because it meant I could then go to the day job and carry on with that.
And can the groups be any size, or is there a limit on the numbers?
There isn't a limit. There is an optimum size. We our vision for every group is to get to 50-plus local business owners, because at that size, there's going to be a large number of people out there looking for business referrals for you, and it's easier for you to find referrals for them because there's just more people to choose from, honestly.
So it's like having your own sales force, really?
It's exactly like that, yeah. It's very powerful once it works well. We do have a number of groups now which cater for the non-breakfast market, so sort of lunchtime, mid-morning, that kind of thing.
Oh, really? What are they?
So our lunchtime groups meet between 12 and 2, and we tend to find Friday lunchtime tends to be more popular.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've got a couple of mid-morning groups as well, which kind of cater for those who for health or family reasons, just can't get to the early breakfast.
So. Okay. And what would you say are the main advantages of BNI?
The main advantage, the main one is it's proven that it maximises your business. It will help you to grow your business. And by having 20, 30, 40, 50-plus people out there looking for introductions for you, that is a very powerful proposition. We're also a training organisation.
So yes, I was coming on to that. Yes, what sort of training do you do?
Yeah, we do 10 trainings at the moment to support the members and different sort of opportunities to learn and to grow. And we also encourage members to come back to training more than once, even if they've seen the same training before. And the benefits of that are, number one, you meet lots of positive, proactive members from across other BNI groups. And business does get done at the trainings. But also, the first time you hear a training, honestly, even if we do our job really well, probably only half of the information sticks. So it takes 2 or 3 goes to really get it, if you like.
Sure, because you have to make a 60-second elevator pitch, don't you?
That's right, yeah. At the meeting, it is optional as a visitor, but as a member, you are required to pitch your business to the room for 60 seconds. And it's very easy to stand up for 60 seconds and say what you do. But we've got a strategy and a technique in our trainings that we offer that shows a slightly more effective way of, rather than telling people just what you do, actually getting business. And there's some key sort of techniques you can use to maximise that.
And also they can be quite entertaining too. I remember some of the meetings I've been in the past that some people can be quite entertaining.
That's right. The key to a good 60 seconds or weekly presentation, as we call it, is to be memorable.
Yeah.
And we do have one member who sings his presentation every
week.
Oh,
really?
Definitely not a requirement.
Gosh, I remember a poet, actually.
Poems are quite a good one. I used to be known when I was a member as kind of the quirky guy who always had a particular specific request. And it's whatever gets you remembered, really.
Sure, sure. And so you started with BNI, with Dover BNI, and then what happened? Because now today you're executive director, so how did your role evolve?
Yeah, that's a good question. So about a year into my membership, I'd gone from being really not a people person. Most engineers tend to be the most effusive characters, and I certainly wasn't. I kind of fell in love with BNI more than I was with my own business, really. I look forward to meetings. I was more of a people person, definitely. And I was offered the opportunity to become what they call a director consultant, which means I was the point of support for BNI for a number of other local groups at the time in Kent, where I live. And that was the most fantastic journey. It was a really good experience. I loved helping the groups. I had some good successes.
So what did you do? If the group was in trouble, they'd come to see you if they wanted advice, or how did it work exactly?
So director consultants visit the groups they support once every 3, 4, 5 weeks to make sure that BNI is delivering value and that it is a system, so we need to make sure there's consistency. And to offer support to the members and the leadership teams, which are selected from the members of the group. So I did that for a number of groups, say in Kent, visited once every 3, 4, 5 weeks, which did mean a lot of early starts.
Yes, I bet.
But it was very rewarding. In fact, weirdly, I used to find I got more done on a BNI day than I did on a day where I didn't get out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning.
And so today, as executive director, what does your role entail?
So now as ED for Surrey, I look after the most fantastic team of director consultants and ambassadors who support the various groups around Surrey. I support a number of groups directly myself, and also, of course, we're opening new groups as well, so to sort of bring the brand back to where it should be. So I'm responsible essentially for running the franchise of BNI in Surrey.
Okay, and if somebody's interested in joining, what's the next step for them?
So we've got a decent website, so go to bnisurrey.co.uk, and if you click on Find Your Nearest Group, which is a large button on the left-hand side, a great big map pops up with all of the current active groups, we call them chapters, all of the new groups which are in formation, and all of the waiting lists where we are planning to start a group at some point.
Right, and then they can just go along to one without any commitment and see what it's like.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a great thing to have a look at, even if it's not something you think is going to be for you long term, because, you'll meet a bunch of fantastic local business owners, you might get some good suppliers, you might get some business yourself, and who knows, down the line, it might be something that's worth revisiting, for sure.
Okay, well, if we can now talk about some success stories, because on the website there's one from Adrian Moon Forward Construction. I've had £2 million worth of business from BNI in 4 years. The personal support of my BNI colleagues has been incredible. So, that's done very well for him, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. We get asked quite a lot, when Adrian's a builder, we get asked quite a lot, does BNI work better for certain business types? And you might think, when a builder, they're going to be doing large contracts, it's going to be fairly easy for them to get success. The honest truth is, 9 years' experience in BNI, I've seen members in very sought-after categories, such as builder, accountant, financial advisor, honestly, maybe not get it, and maybe it's not quite right for them. And I've seen members in very, very niche categories, such as hypnotherapist, window cleaner, I mean, really super niche categories, do fantastically well. So it is all about the person. But that said, of course, there are some categories where it is very, very sought after. Financial advisor, accountant are the two most sought after.
Are they really? That's interesting.
Yeah. But Adrian's a great guy. He lives just down the road from me, actually. He's really got it. He makes sure he's there every week. He's presentable. He's smart. He comes to the trainings. He's always contributing. And it's the philosophy of BNI is two words. It's give us gain.
Yes.
So if you give, you'll get back in return. And Adrian is definitely a giver, and that's why he's benefited so well from it.
And are the people very reliant on the sort of chapter they're in, the members of that chapter, and can they move within chapters?
We don't encourage moving chapters unless there's an exceptional circumstance. The reason for that is BNI ultimately is based on relationships. So if you meet the same group of people every week, ultimately, by following the BNI system, you will deepen you'll really strengthen your relationships.
Yes.
And the quality introductions will only come with very, very strong relationships. By moving chapters, as I say, unless there's an exceptional circumstance, it's possibly going to dilute the membership because those relationships will be, therefore be very transient.
Right, okay. And so you advise them to stay in the same chapter?
If at all possible, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and are you still running your own company as a utility warehouse distributor?
Technically, yes, but reality is no. Being an ISO is very much a full-time vocation for me. So,
of course.
UW is sort of not really happening for me at the moment.
Okay, well, thank you very much for telling us all about BNI. Would you like to give us the website address again so people can get more information?
Absolutely, my pleasure, Jack. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's bnisurrey.co.uk.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Super. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you. Thanks to all our guests today. Loretta Cundy from Mad About My Business, Leah Chowdhury from Leah C. Childcare, Nikki Faulkner from Mulberry Bush Consulting, and Jonathan Hamilton, Executive Director, BNI Surrey. And thank you to my producer, Graham Laycock. And to stay in touch, or if you know any business people who should be on our programme, please email studio@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details and a little bit about them. And do follow us on Twitter at Brooklands Radio. Do visit the Business Affairs webpage on brooklandsradio.co.uk for details of forthcoming guests and to listen to previous editions of Surrey Business Affairs. This show will be repeated next Thursday, the 12th of April at 7 o'clock in the evening. The next edition of Surrey Business Affairs will be on Thursday, the 3rd of May, at 1 o'clock, so do listen in. So it's goodbye from me, Jackie Mitchell.
Surrey Business Affairs. If you'd like to take part, email businessaffairs@brooklandsradio.co.uk. That's Surrey Business Affairs, for and about local businesses in Surrey.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, why not keep up to date with the Sound of Surrey by listening live at brooklandsradio.co.uk or through our free mobile app.